It's one of those other bombs of fireworks going off. So if you, can you hear any booms?
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the GRK podcast. Just three of us this week. It's me, Carl, Cuttooth, aka Chris. Say hello, Chris.
Hi there.
And Captain Kill, aka Stuart. Say hello, Stuart.
Hello, hello.
So, this week, I want to talk to you guys about the Edge 100, you know, best games list and the controversy surrounding that. And of course, any of these lists are going to be controversial because, you know, everyone has their own ideas about what the best games are and what makes a great game great. No one's going to agree on those 100 games, and everyone's going to argue the toss about it. So I thought, well, why don't we do exactly that?
Sounds good. Can you fill me in what the controversy is? Because, like when I did my uni exams, I've not done any revision before this.
People thought the list was a load of crap. That's like the very short version.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if Chris wants to add anything to that, you know, any flavour, but I think I summed it up.
Yeah, I think people just had problems with it. Basically, it didn't match what they thought their own top 100 would be. I think that's the easiest way to put it.
And you, I think that kind of reaction is natural and inevitable because you can't codify objectively what makes a game good. So people are always going to have these very strong disagreements.
What do you mean by objective? I mean, do you just mean the kind of soul of it?
Let's jump into it then. So more broadly, I think, you know, we need to try to answer the question, you know, how do you like rank a game against another game? Can you, you know, is it meaningful to like assign numeric scores to a game? You know, how do you compile a list of even great games compared to like good ones? And let's start with you, Stuart.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the idea of comparison is kind of fruitless unless you're going to stick within a genre. And these top 100 lists don't usually do that. So they could be... you'll get... I mean, you said that how can you objectively say if a game's good? That is possible. Because it has to have strong aspects in it in terms of mechanics, music that can add to the experience, a story if needed. And these all are objective things that need to be of a quality for a game to be good. But in terms of comparisons between games, that's a more fruitless endeavour. Because just genres alone, so real-time strategy game and... let's dig down a bit more. A turn-based RPG grand strategy game against a first-person shooter, two completely different games. How can you say one is better? How can you say one in one genre is better than the other when you have such competing mechanics, or such different mechanics, should I say?
So, a friend of mine is like a programmer, and he is making, at the moment, a turn-based strategy game. And you know,
does
I mean,
it have
it's
elements
very...
of romance and characters in it?
I think it actually might do one day because it's based on Fire Emblem. It's based on Fire Emblem. But he's, you know, he would be the first to admit that like at the moment it's like not very good. Like you move triangles around the screen, and you know all the backgrounds are just different shades of blue. So I mean, compare that to I don't know, Overwatch. I mean, I think it's clear that Overwatch, in some sense, is the better game, even though they're in two completely different genres. So I think, like, at the extremes of that scale, you can do it. Why do you lose nuance in the middle?
But you are comparing an unfinished game. I bet you if you got your hands on a very early edition of Overwatch and then played your mate's game next to it, you'd probably go, 6.5 dozen, really?
I mean, sure.
Well, when he starts putting the graphics in and his background and his music... Who knows? You could say, I'm in the mood for playing this game, not in the mood for playing Overwatch. To me, this is the better game at this point. See, it's like genres. You can say games are better craft. If you can say, I don't know, if something's like really shitty mechanics and it, like people, a lot of people saying the new Dawn of War 3 is a MOBA type game and not very good. And I suppose there you can say, well, the mechanics in there aren't fun, aren't good. So comparing them to other games where the mechanics are more fleshed out and are fun, a comparison can be made there. But if you look at games that are considered good, that was something else I was saying. If you manage to get a game, look at it objectively and say, this can be considered a good or great game, comparing that to other good or great games, like in these top 100 lists, where it's like, this is a numerical list of this game is the 100th best game in the world, and the game at number one is the first best game in the world. No, it should just be top 100 good games or great games. And it's like, any order, or maybe group them by genre, so that people don't feel like there's an order in them. Because if you were to just list them randomly, people would, like, in their minds, just assign it an order based upon the order in which the games were displayed. But if you were to group them in a more organized way, then, you know, that would be prevented. You'd still get your list. There wouldn't be as many arguments.
I think that's basically right. I think the problem with these kinds of lists is that they're actually too big. I mean, I think if you ask any one person what your top 5 or top 10 games of all time, they could probably rank them, those 10. They could probably pick those, you know, 10 and rank them quite easily. I think the problem is if you asked anyone to take 100 games and rank them, oh, this one is actually the 73rd. No, this one is the 72nd best game, I think. It becomes much harder for someone. And I think the problem is that a lot of like publications do these kinds of lists, and they are so definitive, or the language that they use is so definitive that these are the best games ever made, and they're ranked so that the number one is the best game ever made, and number 100 is 99 games worse than that. I just don't think you can actually genuinely do that, and I think the problem is a lot of people look at those lists and go, well, this means that these people think this game is better than this game. And the way they're usually compiled is by like a team of people saying, okay, what is your top 10? And then the game that came up like top on most of them will probably have more points or something like that, and be the top one. I mean, I actually ran, like, I think it's probably going on 6 years ago now, I did it was actually a top 100 of the games made from the 90s, and it was a bit of a disaster because I didn't get enough of a response, really, so my sample was pretty small. So the top games were like what you'd usually expect. I think Ocarina of Time came up number one, like I think everyone would expect at that point. But you had like Chrono Trigger was like 100, and it was a disaster because I put in a rule that you could only vote for games that were released in the UK, being the UK-based forum, in the 90s. So Chrono Trigger was never released in the 90s, I think. So it was like, well, we couldn't really count it, but some people sort of insisted. So I sort of messed that up. But if you don't do sort of the parameters right, and you don't get enough of a response, your top 100 can be picked apart by someone who looks at it and goes, hang on, that doesn't make sense. You're saying, I don't know, Chrono Trigger's number 100 and FIFA World Cup is like 70. And that immediate sort of difference can be picked up on so quickly. And I think people see it as like this objective thing, as this is what this is, when really it's a completely subjective thing from a bunch of people collating all their different opinions together. And I don't think it really works, and I don't think it really is actually all that helpful. I don't think anyone looks at the, you know, say Edge's list and goes, right, those are the 100 games that are the best, and I need to play these ones. And I think it's a bit fruitless to actually get sort of so wound up about it like a lot of people do.
Yeah, I think I just realised something. We've all been conned. It's all clickbait. these are the definitive top 100 games, obviously someone's going to click on that, and obviously they're going to be pissed because their favourite game isn't up at the top, or even the top 10. And then they're going to argue and say, Edge's list. We opened up saying, Edge's list. Instead of just talking about lists, we mentioned Edge's list. People are now going to go to... Edge got us. Hook, line, and sinker.
Well, since you have the name of the edit, so...
Can you please beep Edge? Beep Edge. Every time we say Edge, please beep Edge.
So, Chris, you said something interesting there. You said that you felt that you could rank your top 10 games. If someone asked you, you know, 1 to 10, and you know, 2 is a little bit worse than 1, and 3 is a little bit worse than 2, but it's your top 10, you felt like you could do that?
I think so, because it's... Well, I think it's easier in sort of smaller chunks, and not just like smaller chunks of like 10 of all time, but also like game of the year lists. So a lot of people say, when people think about the best games they've played in a year, they follow almost a format that a lot of, I think, movie critics use, of like, they actually genuinely rank it because like award seasons are a thing, like in the movie industry. So it's like, well, this is, I think, the best one. So I think this was the one that should win, like, best picture at the Oscars. Whereas, and I think you can do the same thing in video games. So I think I can definitely do that, say, for a year. I say, well, I've played 10 games this year, and I think this is, I can rank them better than the other because they're fresher. I think the problem maybe with the, or, you know, the best games of all time is that you're actually then diving into the memories of playing those games, which are on the whole going to be like, well, for us, stretching back probably about 20 years of like when we first started playing games and the games we played in those in that past 20 years, it just feels that I don't know if anyone's really ranking, say, the game itself, but more like the memory of playing that game. But at the same time, yes, I think I could, given enough time, probably say, okay, 10 games, what the 10 games that I think are the best I've played in the past 20 years, and rank them. But getting bigger than that, I don't think I've got the time for it, but I think it just then becomes, I think it sort of creates that sort of almost dissonance where it's like, well, hang on, this is 20, this is 19. I mean, I would want to tweak it too much, you know? Whereas with 10, or even 5 or 10, I think you could get away with saying, okay, well, there's a bunch of games that didn't make my top 10, but that doesn't mean I think that, you know, game number 11 in the back of my mind is much better than game number 90. They're all just the rest.
Does that mean, though, that you slightly disagree with Stuart? Are you saying that, say, this year, you... Come Christmas, you've played Zelda Breath of the Wild and you've played Mario Odyssey. Now you know, Zelda, you know, is a brilliant game. We all know Mario Odyssey is going to be a brilliant game. And you think you're going to be able to rank one above the other. You're going to be able to say, oh, one just edges it for me. But Stuart was saying, oh, you know, between genres, you know, your comparison doesn't become as meaningful. So, I mean, which of you is right? Fight it out.
All right. Well, part of my point was that these lists are usually created as a sort of educational tool to let you know about games you might have missed that are considered quite good. And the fact you will order them by a number will kind of cheapen. Well, I can't think of the right word. I'll just use the word cheapen until... Editing the correct word, it'll cheapen the games like in the between 75 and 100, because people will just go, ah, yeah, but it's not even halfway. Why should I look at that? Even though they can be bloody good games in different genre, in a genre they might be very interested in. So if they were arranged by genre and you just lose the numerical, I mean, there is no benefit in ordering them numerical apart from to create arguments. I mean, you could have, this is my, the people who make the list, they could have a little section at the end saying, personally, this is my favourite game. But as a educational tool, like most top 100 lists are, you can order them by sequence and say, these are some bloody good games across multiple genres, And if you are interested, like they could even break it down even more if they wanted, because a numbered list is quite detailed. If they want that detail in there, they could say, if you're interested in dipping into this genre, here's a really good game for beginners, or are you quite experienced in this genre? Here's a more advanced game in the genre, and it's got depth that, you know, people, like, for example, Crusader Kings 2, apparently a bloody good game. I can't play it, though. And that would be a good recommendation for people who love turn-based strategies, love grand strategy games. But anybody else, if they tried to get their toes dipped in that, you know, they would have no fucking clue.
Yeah. So you're saying that, like, assessing the merits of the game in like an essay about it, or you're a review,
not even that. It can still be in a list, but if you're like, just saying these games in that genre are good, like putting a numerical value is assigning a worth to the games, and that creates a level of detail in that list. If people are still wanting that kind of detail, then within the, let's say, 100 games, and they get 10 genres or something, let's just break it down like that. Within those 10 genres, you can have one game that's like good for beginners, and one game that's good for more experienced people. So it's like, I just don't like the idea of, like, because I had a quick scan through that list. As like, I could see, like, as I was going down, it's like from 100 down to 1, it's like, good game, good game, good game, good game. But if someone, like maybe a younger person, goes, oh, people say the Edge list, Edges might be quite good and true to, regarding their reviews, they look at this list as like, I won't bother with anything above above 10. Because why should I? Those are the 10 top games. I mean, and they could miss something they really love.
Yeah, I think that's basically what I think as well, that I could, at the end of the year, I could rank Mario above Zelda or the other way around, but I don't think I could tell that to anyone and say this game is better than this game.
The two different games are like Zelda and Mario.
Exactly, the two. Even if they were sort of in the same genre, I could say, okay, I think this game is a better game, but you'd always have to come back to saying, in my opinion, this is, you know, it sort of goes without saying, but you'd have to sort of make it explicit.
You'd have to caveat and say, but they're both fucking good, and you should play them.
Oh yeah, I think.
And at that point, there's no point in ranking them, because if the caveat is you should play them both anyway, or that's just my personal opinion, if you are going to rank them, then there's no point of even ranking it. Just have them both on equal footing and say, bloody good game.
Yeah, I don't think there is much point in really ranking it. I think you could say, you know, the game that I felt was the best I played this year was this, but I don't think there's really even much point doing the rest of it, arguably. You can say, well, the rest of these are really good games I played this year. You know, here's another 8. Say, these are the, you know, 9 games played this year. Here's 8 of them. Really good, but the one I really enjoyed out of all of them, I think is the best game out of all of them, is this one. I think you can do that really easily, because I think like a publication like Edge could do that quite easily by consensus of, say, their staff or whatever. But it's when it comes to ranking number by number by number, like I said, it becomes definitive. It becomes that sort of educational tool of saying, this is the best, or this is, you know, slightly better. I think they should do it like PC Gamer magazine does it. I don't know if you've seen their top 100 list. They do it every single year, and it's always based on, I think the staff take like 10 or 15 games, and they say, what's the best games that you could play as a PC gamer right now? So games from like 10 years ago that we've gotten straight into that top 100, probably top 20 or something like that, they're not going to make it now because actually nobody's playing that game anymore. Or if you were to pick 15 games that are the best games that you could play right now, it wouldn't come into any of them or any of those staff members. I think that's a much better way of doing it because, like I said, it's doing that sort of educational tool thing where you're saying, you know, if you've got a PC that can play a X level of game, these are the games that, you know, there's thousands of games, say, on Steam and just wherever. Here's a small snapshot that we think are the best ones that you could buy and load up and enjoy as of right now. I think that's a much better way of doing a list than just saying categorically, here's, you know, here's a medium that is, what, 40 years old? Out of all those games that are released in 40 years, these are the hundreds that are the best ever made and set in stone. And I think that's the problem, is it sets it in stone almost. And they do revisit, I think, from time to time, but at the same time, they just go, well, it's that definitive sort of language, I think, is the problem.
But just scanning through this list just now, like, let's just assume that a new Kiddy Winkle is like, I want to get into games. It's like, oh, a good start off would be to look at this list. Oh, 100, I don't have time for that. I'll even just take from the 50 downwards. Within that top 50, you have Destiny, which is now a dead game. No one's going to be playing that, so you're going to miss out on a lot of the content. So why is it even there? Because it's like, so, yeah, you can play it, but the major component of it, multiplayer, unless you can convince everyone else to play this outdated multiplayer game, it's gone.
Well, but then in a publication, but in a publication like Edge, though, which takes itself somewhat seriously, at least, is there no room for a historical perspective in these lists? Is there no room for saying, oh, Half-Life was a really significant game when you consider the first-person shooter as an art form?
But the way they are wording, the way it kind of, how's it, welcome to the 17 top 100 greatest video games. The way this list is written, it implies present tense and that everything here can be approached now. But then you have something like Destiny, which is, and they would know that that game would be dead soon. They started making this list with Destiny 2 around the corner. So I don't know why it's there. But then you have stuff above 50. Like, this is if you were going to use this as some sort of educational document. So you have your standard stuff like Doom 2016, Titanfall 2, Far Cry 4, kind of standard games. But the kind of more unique ones, Nidhogg's up there, Monster Hunter 4, XCOM Enemy Unknown. Things that aren't as mainstream, but still bloody good. FTL's up there. Her Story, which is quite a unique experience. These are all things that should also be given, you know, a bit of a highlight, but because they're above the top 50, people might not even pay attention to it.
So,
the numbering's my issue. That's the main thing, is the fact that if you number it, people have assigned worth to it. And because we're only human, there'll be a cut-off point where people, where they say, anything above that, I don't have enough time. I'm either working, I'm going to school, I've got a family. There's not enough time to try this shit.
Everything
above
what you mean.
A point is gone, and I won't be able to ever try them because they are not good enough. Because why would I waste my time? Like, if there's a competition, you know, with a couple hundred people in, it's like top 100, who cares? I want to know top 10, top 5, maybe even top 20 or 30 at a stretch. Anything above that, I don't care about. Deemed less worthy by this extremely well-regarded publisher. What they should have done, gotten rid of the numbers, they could have called it the greatest games list ever, or they could have called it list of bloody good games.
I'm not sure even the problem of the ranking is that people will jump straight to like the top 20 or top...
I know I do.
But I'm not sure a lot of other people do as well, but I don't think that's even really the problem. I think it's more, if you have categorically one game ranked higher than another, fans of like that other game who think the opposite will be like, no, this is wrong, this goes counter to what I think. And because it's not presented as, here's a group, here's what collectively a group of people have determined, but it's just those people, so don't worry, they're not saying that if you think opposite you're wrong. People don't sort of take that on board. And I think I think Edge know that. They know, like you say, it's slightly clickbaity almost, where they know exactly sort of how people take it. Going back to like that list of top games from the 90s, I remember it was a weird thing where in the middle of the list, it went Monkey Island 1, Broken Sword 1, Monkey Island 2, Broken Sword 2. And I remember someone on the forum was like, that's ridiculous. How can the BrokenSword games be ranked higher than Monkey Island. It's like, well, they just were, because that's how people responded. That's, you know, people subjectively had opinions on ranking sort of games that, as a group, they ranked those games in that particular order. But that doesn't come through on other, you know, lists like this Edge one. And I think you sort of get that sort of reaction culminating in threads that are like the one on the forum at the moment, where people are saying, collectively, can we agree on like the best games ever made? And you get to veto ones that you don't think are. And it's just anarchy, because you've just got a huge list of games which arguably are really good games. All of them, or pretty much all those games, I think, in the sort of first page of that thread, are really, really good. But half of them are like deemed, nope, that's not going to go on a best of list, because other people have said, nope, that's not on my best of list. So it's impossible to agree on a consensus. And I think that's sort of the lesson I think everyone needs to take from these kinds of lists, where don't take them as a sort of entirely 100% correct consensus. Just take them as at a point in time, this is what a small group of people thought were the best games, and it came out in this order because they ranked them in this order. And just chill out, I guess.
So, I actually, like, I have some statements, you know, about, yeah, a game. Sure. Let's just pick, you know, arbitrarily Metroid Prime. I have some statements about Metroid Prime that I'm interested in hearing, you know, your thoughts on these statements. So, Metroid Prime is a great game. You're both presumably happy with that.
Carl, I've never played a single Metroid game ever.
Never. Ah, imagine I said,
I know it's apparently meant to be good, from what I've heard.
I think Metroid Prime is a great game.
Cool. For you, Kill, yeah, let's say it's Ocarina of Time or something. It doesn't matter.
I've not played Ocarina of Time.
Does Samus come out of her suit? Yeah, if you collect all of the powers.
Great game.
Great, good. So you know, this great game that I've just picked out of a hat, just imagine it's whatever you think is a great game. So Metroid Prime is a 9 out of 10 game.
Yeah.
You guys are happy with that?
Yeah, I mean, numbers are numbers, man.
Chris?
As in when it was released or now?
So I'm just going on a website, and I'm just one of these game list trackers, and I'm just rating it a 9, because I believe in my heart that it's like a 9 out of 10 game.
When I think of like scoring something, I guess personally I would probably agree with that. It's a 9 out of 10 game in terms of how
if you were to score it.
Yes, if I were to score it, but also in my not thinking of like, this is what other people think. They think it's this game. I think, okay, of the games I've played, that sort of it is basing it on the memory of playing that game. Yes, that was a really great experience. That's a really great game. I think it's a 9 out of 10.
So let me just take this one little step further then, and you'll see now what I'm trying to sell.
Oh no.
Metroid Prime is a 93% game.
I'm indifferent to it.
I'm
indifferent to that percent. Like, I kind of know what you're getting at. Like, where do you stop this madness? But if, like, you can ask, where does that 3% come from?
I agree. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think it becomes almost too granular.
Yeah.
It becomes sort of like, okay, 93, so that's best than 92. What's a 92 game? Oh, that would be blah, 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 blah. It becomes too molecular, I guess, or it just goes into itself too much. And it's like, no, just stop at the first one. Just say, this is this, and this is what you think, and like, give your opinion about it. Don't go into, okay, well, this is the tiny little bit better because mechanic X, I think, is better than this other mechanic in this other game, or however you want to sort of rank it. You know, if we're sort of going by like review scores and things, I remember when review scores had like gameplay out of 10, graphics out of 10, or whatever, and go like, that, and we can look back on that, and I think most places don't really do that anymore, but we can look back and go, that's a weird thing to do, because it's trying to be so objective, and I think when you get into that little level of detail, you lose something on just someone giving their opinion on why they think this game is good or not good.
Yeah, absolutely. So to stop being this kind of like impartial moderator and to jump in with my view, I think that this process of assigning numbers to an experience or like the quality of like a work of art, which these games I think should be counted as artistic endeavors.
If 100 artists are working on a piece of work for 2 years, is it not considered a work of art?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it should be.
And also, do you remember GFW Radio years ago?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's an old podcast, but they had an idea where, because it was a magazine, Games for Windows, and they did a podcast with it. And they said that they were sick of numbers because people were just arguing with them all the time and someone got death threats over it. And I'm sick of it. So what we should just do is assign random pictures for games and not tell people what the system is.
That's clever. I think you can't assign these numbers to your like assessment of an artistic endeavor because it puts that artistic endeavor on an objective scale. That numbers mean something. They have like units, right? You're saying it's
Carl,
9
Mona
out
Lisa,
of 10.
How much out of 10?
Exactly. You know, you wouldn't look at Michelangelo's David and say, oh, you know, that's a 9.4, right?
But unfortunately, so I was just going to say, so pretty much anything in the electronic medium, they're getting ratings. Music, films, games, anything before, like classical orchestra, don't really get reviews for that. Theatre you do, but paintings and pictures you don't. It's a real mixed bag.
I think that sort of, that is true of all those kinds of different forms of entertainment, but I think it's much worse for games because the culture surrounding like games criticism and like it, it's horrible. And like you get things like game critics being attacked by fans of a game saying you gave it a 70 something. Don't you realize that will lower the Metacritic score? And you know. That will
You're
hurt,
taking
like,
food from their mouths,
and it's like, these game critics just go back and go, well, you know, come on, I just thought it was this, you know.
Yeah,
it's like,
I would respond, it is punishment for them not making a better game.
Well,
and taking food out of their baby's mouths because they didn't do a good enough job.
But it's like most of the time, they're not even saying that; they're just saying like, "Oh, I didn't like this game, or I thought it had these flaws, so this is the number that I have to give it." But they don't, you know, we could go down an entire path of saying, I don't think numbers should be assigned to reviews really all that much, if ever. You know, the reviews sites that I tend to read these days are probably Eurogamer and Rock Paper Shotgun. Neither of those now use review scores. I don't think RPS ever used review scores, actually, but I think in gaming culture, it's much worse than, like, say, movies. Where something can get like a 3-star review and you don't tend to get like, say, fans of the director coming out and going, this is diabolical. How can anyone review this director's film as anything less than like a 4 or 5 star or something like that? You don't tend to get, it's not anywhere near as visible if it does happen as it is in like games culture, which I think is sort of a, just an offset of like geek culture as a whole. So like say comic books can be ranked, tend to be ranked in similar ways. And I think that maybe stems from like this idea of wanting to agree with each other or something, or trying to sort of have this like group collective thing of like, no, this is correct. And the rest of the, you know, it's our internal thing that the rest of the world doesn't get to decide on. I don't know if it is like that, but that's what sort of comes to mind, really.
There seems to be an acceptance in other media that like a 3 or 4 star rating reflects like the personal opinion or like even just like the personal enjoyment of like a particular critic. Whereas in games, there seems to be a pretension towards actually assessing the like value of a game by giving it a rating. And I think it doesn't help that you have like some publications actually going to like, oh yeah, this is a 93% game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't help at all because you're putting it in like numeric terms. You're saying that is the value of the game. I'm more sympathetic to, oh, that's like a 4-star or a 5-star game. Because you can almost think about the words that represent those star ratings. You know, 5 stars is excellent, 4 stars is great, 3 stars is, you know, good, 2 is not so good, 1 is bad, right? Whereas what word represents 93% as opposed to 94 or like 92.
Yeah. I wonder if it's sort of maybe that kind of trying to assign such a granular numeric score maybe stems from like sort of viewing games when they were first sort of breaking out in like the 80s and sort of just software.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you might sort of say, you can give an objective review to say Photoshop or Lightroom or something. I think you can say, a graphic designer can say, I'm a graphic designer. I think this new version of Photoshop is this out of 10 or something, or really break down, or I think it does this badly because I can measure, say, using this computer. It now does something really, really slow that the other version didn't do. So I think this is objectively worse because it's not as good a piece of software. Whereas with video games, you can do that a little bit with like how things run, how things are optimized, and you know generally how buggy things are. You can do that a little bit, but you can't really do that for the actual experience of playing the game generally or what that game is trying to do as a video game. I think that's really the core difference, and I think that's where it's maybe had that... It's kept that from, say, reviews of 30 years ago. And I think we're starting to move away from it, but I don't think things like then objectively ranking lists 100-1 and being quite sort of definitive with it helps sort of change the views of people who sort of do get sort of quite riled up by things like this.
Okay, so I think we're in broad agreement
we're all in agreement that scores are obsolete and unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think these scores have ever been necessary. And I think I agree with Chris, but it's come out of this culture of a kind of nerdiness, but it's not actually how other forms of art are assessed. You know, even when you have like guides aimed at like consumers who are, you know, which employ like star ratings and stuff for films, there's like an understanding in those fan bases that you have film critics with like particular tastes who give like particular ratings and particular strands of advice and particular reviews, but they're not claiming that like they're saying anything objective about the game. About the film, rather, and I think that it should be the same with games. There should be more recognition that you can discuss the merits of a game as you see them as like a critic that like knows a lot about games, but you can't say like, oh yeah, this is objectively good or this is objectively bad for most of the aspects of games that are actually important. You can maybe do it at the extremes of the spectrum, for things which are just like terribly optimized versus things which push technology beyond the what was considered possible, and you can go, objectively, this is pushing more polys, but that's usually not what makes a game interesting. as an experience of art or even just entertainment. So when you actually want to like rate a game, I think it's much more important to have the subjective, you know, opinions in there, maybe expert opinions, but still opinions, and to have like a recognition if you're going to do a scoring system that you aren't rating like the value of a game, you're rating your feeling about a game. Yeah. And you can't rate your feeling about a game 94.281%. That's not
like a robot.
Exactly. You just like you're just like you're just saying it's good or it's bad or it's excellent, it's great or it's poor or fair. These are like words that like describe feelings about something's quality. Once you go into the realm of like giving something very precise scores, you can't like. You can't possibly justify that with like the text of your review, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you, once you start doing that, you're taking the emotion out of what's meant to be some kind of emotional experience. So yeah, I fully agree with that. In fact, if you're going to do like a list of top games, go with like the most interesting games and sort of games that fly under the radar or games that were the most influential. Don't even bother ranking it. Just say these are the most influential games. People will have arguments about that anyway, but at least it's a bit more interesting or a bit more thought-provoking than just saying 100 to 1 top 100 games. I think there's nothing really interesting about sort of doing a list like that. Whereas if you do a list like say PC Gamer do with changing every single year of what you can play now, you know, the best that you can play now, according to staff members, or you'd go, you know, what's your top? We think these are what we think are the top 10 most interesting, like Stuart was saying, games of this genre ever released, or that you can play now, or something like that. Just, I think people should go at it with a much more, with a viewpoint of trying to be more interesting, basically, than trying to almost be right.
Yeah. Absolutely. People might actually learn something from an article that's like 100 top historically important influential games that helped define their genres. People might read that and go, oh crikey, that's, you know, I didn't know that, you know, Half-Life was, you know, the first game to have its style of narrative storytelling, you know, without cutscenes. People might go, oh wow, that's interesting. And they would concede that, like, maybe Half-Life is, like, a significant game. Whereas I'm sure there are plenty of people out there, maybe younger people, who would say, oh, Half-Life shouldn't be anywhere near a list of the top 100 best games, because, you know, just look at it, it controls poorly compared to, you know, modern games. It looks like arse compared to, like, modern games. They might have, like, these, like, measures in their mind of what makes a game good, in air quotes. But they maybe would view it from a different perspective if you stop phrasing it in those terms and just say, oh, you know, this game was significant, or this game was, you know, in some sense important. I'm not saying it's better than any other games, but I'm saying, you know, gaming today would look a bit different if it had never existed. I think that's like a really interesting, like, you know, list for someone to put together. So I'd agree with you completely there, Chris. I think we've reached a kind of consensus here. I don't know how fun this will be to listen to, because I think we broadly agree with each other, but hopefully we've had a good chat about it. We've reached this kind of consensus where you can say that a game was like important, and you can kind of sift out the brilliant games from the kind of decent ones, and people feel like that's possible, that's achievable. What I'm really interested in now is to hear, if you're going to put together a list of just brilliant games, let's say we're not ranking them, we're not assigning numbers to them, you know, but we want to point out some brilliant games that, you know, so people can go play them. How do we make sure we don't get any games in there that are just decent or okay or like even good? How do we define a brilliant game? What makes a game excellent or even great as opposed to kind of good or decent? Stuart, like, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I was just going to say, for something like that, you would, it's obviously down to personal preference. What you would need is someone to kind of back you up with it. And that's a good, because the more and more people are like, yes, that is a brilliant game, then you're kind of refining, you're kind of getting rid of the chance of it just being a kind of fluke for you and only you like it. Like, I have like some kind of not very good games, and I'm like thinking about it, it's like, oh, you know, it was exactly the best. And but if you have like, you know, 10 people all agreeing and going, bloody good game, bloody brilliant game, with very few complaints, then you can pretty much assume that it is a good game, and it wasn't just like, it's something about it that just tickled your fancy. Maybe you liked the music a lot, maybe it was just goofy and you're just in a very goofy mood at the time. But yeah, it's consensus does kind of help with that.
I'm not sure about like consensus necessarily. I don't think you need to sort of say, I think this is a brilliant game, but unfortunately nobody's going to back me up on this, so it's not a brilliant game. To you, it's still a brilliant game. I think it's fine to say something's brilliant, you know, it's really one of the best games that you can recommend or something, but I think you just obviously need to back up and say, I think it's the best game because it does this really interestingly, or it does it has this point in the game or something which is worth like the admission or something like that. I think basically you should be able to say this game is brilliant simply because if I had never played it, I'd be disappointed that I would have never played it or something like that, or I would be poorer almost for having not experienced this game, say, at this point, or, you know, as a video game fan or something like that. To say, if you know, almost think like, what are the games that, if you could, you would completely wipe your memory of and play again? I think those are the brilliant games that everyone should, that everyone has sort of that personal feeling of, and should be saying, these are the games that I think are the best. These are the ones I wish I could play for the first time again. I think that's sort of almost like the best, what's the word? The best recommendation.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. That's actually a quite decent point.
And then rank them 10 to 1. don't do that. You don't have to do that.
So for the very, very last quick point, Metacritic and sites like that that take a huge number of these review scores and then perform a kind of statistical analysis on them. Sometimes they just average them, but I mean, the sky's the limit when it comes to averaging them. You can like make adjustments, you know, based on genre and things like that. You know, you can look at the distribution of scores given by each, you know, reviewer, and then like normalize based on those. And you can produce this kind of statistical analysis of the, like a bulk of opinion that's been put in that like numerical format. Do you think that is like worthwhile, and if so, in what respects? And if not, why is it not helpful? You know, do you guys use those sites, and what do you use them for? I'm just interested in hearing your thoughts, because we kind of like we knocked like numerical review scores, and I feel it's those sites that try to make something meaningful out of them. So I just want to hear your thoughts.
I don't use things like Metacritic or there's another one I can't quite remember, but I don't use sites like that because I sort of look at, say, games news or I look at previews of games coming out. I'm pretty on the ball of what's generally coming out for platforms that I play games on. I also have built up, say, knowledge of games critics that, generally speaking, and I think this is the best thing anyone can do, it's generally speaking whose reviews or tastes in games most closely match my own or more likely to align with my own. And I take what those people are saying about X game and go, okay, I think what this person says will probably align to what I will probably think about this game more than anyone else, and I'll see what they're saying and go, okay, I'll form my opinion on whether I should buy that game, which is what I think a lot of people say is, oh, it's a buyer's guide kind of thing. That's what I'll use. So having sort of 20 random, well, not random, but 20 people whose opinions maybe don't closely match mine saying this about it, I'm not that interested in sort of that sort of averaged out score. And I think these kinds of websites that average out the scores, I don't think they would be bad in themselves anyway, just because some people might just go, well, I don't do that. I don't do the things that I do. I just want to know if the next game in the series that I like is any good. So you can say, well, it's got these scores. So, okay, I can sort of make some kind of judgment call on whether it's good or not. I don't think that's great, but I don't think that's necessarily harmful. Where it becomes harmful, and I think genuinely do think like websites like Metacritic are by and large quite harmful now, is where, say, publishers will use what the Metacritic score is of a game that's been newly released and say, okay, well, because it didn't get this, that's going to impact the sales, so we're going to shut down the developing team that made it. And I think that's a problem because obviously you can say, oh, they're businesses and all this kind of thing, but it becomes a problem because it's not just taking an average now. It's assigning a really big meaning to what that average is when you're then losing scope of what that number actually is. It's just 20 different people's opinions that have been ranked numerically. And that's when it becomes that sort of objective thing. And that's where it suddenly becomes, actually, this is not just not good, but actually potentially quite harmful.
Okay, thank you. So I think that wraps it up. And I'm really glad you guys reached kind of some agreement with me. Because I know that my opinions are objectively correct. And, you know, I wouldn't have had to have thought that you're both kind of wrong and stupid. So, you know, I mean, I'm glad I picked my guests wisely.
You don't have to worry about me, Carl. I only have opinions above an 8.
I heard, though, that sometimes a 7 is better than an 8. Anyway, let's call this here. Let's, before we stray into cyberbullying. Thank you both for joining me and having this chat with me. I thought we were all going to argue the toss more than we did, to be honest. I thought this was going to get really vicious. Why so? Because you're both wrong so often on the forums. let's wrap this up here. I think it's about an hour. Hopefully it's still an enjoyable listen, even though there weren't any vicious arguments. As always, I'd be really happy to hear your feedback about this. If you pop on to the G Arcade forums, find the podcast thread. If you're listening, let us know. If you have any suggestions for what we should talk about next time, we would absolutely love to hear them. So that's it from me, from Chris, and from Stuart. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.